This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
The Senate passed a $2.2 trillion Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, or CARES, and that has key help for hurting producers. The historic rescue package the House will try to pass quickly today by unanimous consent, and the President says he'll sign, will give agriculture a much-needed boost during the economic shock of COVID-19. Senate Ag Chairman Pat Roberts.
It provides flexibility and increased resources for the USDA that allow for emergency support to livestock producers and everyone in agriculture dealing with the impacts of the virus.
A big part of that request by the American Farm Bureau and others is close to $15 billion to replenish CCC funds.
It boosts resources for the Commodity Credit Corporation, which ensures that the Department of Agriculture can continue implementing the 218 Farm Bill with programs without delay.
And there's $9.5 billion to help specialty crop producers, direct retail farmers, and livestock operators. But Roberts says that's not all.
To address the needs of rural America, we provided additional resources for telemedicine, broadband, business, and industry loans. On the nutrition front, we provided emergency resources for child nutrition programs, schools and food banks, and families during these uncertain times.
There's also money to keep up USDA mandatory food safety inspections and help prevent supply chain interruptions. All that on top of the bill's hundreds of billions in checks, jobless benefits, loans and grants to businesses, individuals, workers, hospitals, and health care providers. In other news here on your Friday, previous reports have suggested administration officials were considering suspending tariffs to stimulate the economy. However, the top trade advisor for the White House, Peter Navarro, says the Trump administration is not considering that right now. A Marketplace.org report says tariffs are taxes on imported goods that American companies and consumers always wind up paying. The head of the Coalition for a Prosperous America says a lot of the duties were first implemented because many imports were being subsidized or otherwise traded unfairly, injuring American companies and their ability to do business. Economists ranging from the Federal Reserve through the private sector have compared how much of the tariffs have benefited the economy against how much difficulty they bring as well. Quote, tariffs cause more losers than winners, says Dan North, senior economist for a group that provides trade credit insurance. Quote, it's a significant drag on the economy, especially in the current environment. Mary Lovely, a professor of economics at Syracuse, says a suspension would be aimed at U.S. manufacturers that import the needed items to assemble new goods. And implementation of the Phase 1 agreement with China continues, according to the Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Trade Representative's Office. In a news release Tuesday, the two announced continued progress in the implementation of the agriculture-related provisions. Among the recent actions, both countries signed a regionalization agreement that, in the event of a detection of highly pathogenic avian influenza or virulent Newcastle disease in a particular region of the United States, China will allow U.S. poultry exports from unaffected areas. China also notified the U.S. of proposed maximum residue levels for three hormones commonly used in U.S. beef production. U.S. beef producers, for the first time since 2003, will have access to nearly all beef products into China. U.S. pork producers will also be able to significantly expand the types of pork products that are shipped to China. China also updated its list of U.S. facilities eligible to export dried distillers' grains with solubles, and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration published a notice to facilitate the registration of animal feed manufacturing facilities for export to China. In the latest news from the USDA here on your Friday, the coronavirus outbreak here in the country has forced companies to alter the way they do business. The Farm Service Agency and the U.S. Department of Ag are no exception. Bill Northey is USDA's Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation. He says they've had to make some changes to the way they do things in an effort to make sure producers can still access the programs they need.
Our offices are still open, our service centers are, but open by phone appointments now. Certainly are working with producers on all the programs by phone or by email and by mail as well. Our programs are still all available. We're looking at extending some deadlines. Farm loans are very important to producers right now, and it's important to be able to have that available to producers.
He says all it takes is a phone call to get help from your local Farm Service Agency office.
We encourage producers that need the services of our service centers to reach out by phone, set up an appointment, and we'll work through that and serve you well, making sure that our producers are safe and we're maintaining the social distancing as well as protecting the safety of our employees.
They may need to change some program sign-up deadlines in the near future as well.
We will have some deadlines coming up, and just keep your eyes open for those. We're looking at some crop insurance deadlines for some of the minor crops. Obviously, the spring-planted crops, we had a sign-up that was due a week or two ago, and those went and got done, as well as ARC PLC sign-up. We are in the middle of ARC PLC sign-up for 2020. That's still open until June, so plenty of time for that.
Northy says his agency knows the changes will make it a less convenient way to do business, but they'll do their best to make it as simple as possible.
Keep your ears open for other sign-up changes. We know this is a challenge for producers, for our offices. We want to make sure all program activities are available to folks, but we also realize that it's a little harder for them to work with some of their other partners and harder to work over the phone sometimes than over the counter.
Again, that was Bill Northy, the USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation. Now in the latest crop news, it looks like U.S. farmers are upping the number of corn acreage they're going to put in the ground during spring planting this year. The newest Farm Futures survey shows farmers will plant 96.4 million acres of corn during the 2020 planting season. That's the second highest number of intended acres after farmers put a record 97.3 million acres of corn into the ground during 2012. The Farm Futures number is more than 2 million acres higher from the most recent USDA projection in February of 94 million acres. Farm Futures points out that a lot of things have changed between the two forecasts. The coronavirus pandemic hit, upending the global economy. The increased economic uncertainty, historically cheap input costs, as well as weaker soybean demand from China all appear to have made corn the optimal choice among somewhat limited options for Midwest farmers. Farm Futures estimates that soybean plantings will total 82.7 million acres, almost 3 million less than the USDA estimate of 85 million, which also came out in February. The survey estimates that farmers will plant 45.8 million acres of wheat, higher than the USDA's estimate of 45 million. Farm Futures also estimates that farmers will plant 11.7 million acres of cotton. That's less than the USDA's estimate of 12.5 million acres. And hoarding at the grocery store and panic buying is pushing wholesale eggs prices in the Midwest to their all-time high. The Des Moines Register out of Iowa says prices for other staples like milk, beef, and even ice cream have gone higher as well. Joe Kearns is the president of an agricultural consulting company in Ames, Iowa, who says the Midwest isn't short on supply, it's abnormally high demand that's causing the price jump. Because of the uncertainty surrounding the coronavirus outbreak, consumers in Iowa and all across the country are piling way more than usual amounts of groceries in their shopping carts. That's unusually high demand level that's driving prices higher. Kern says it's not a surprise because as restaurants, dining rooms are closed, more people are cooking at home. Some grocers are seeing as much as six times the normal demand for eggs, which is temporarily clearing out shelves. Processors are struggling to fill those orders that are coming in at a rapid pace. Stores in Iowa and Illinois and all across the country say they're seeing an increased price from their suppliers as they keep working to make sure those shelves stay filled with staple products. And in other news due to the coronavirus, that has created a shortage of many items, as we aforementioned, including hand sanitizer. Some wonder why ethanol plants across the Midwest aren't even making hand sanitizer. Chad Frizzy, CEO of the Chippewa Valley Ethanol Plant in Minnesota, says their plant does make hand sanitizer, but it's not that easy for ethanol plants to switch gears from making fuel to sanitizer.
The quality is a huge concern to the market, too. You need U.S. pharmaceutical quality because it's going to be coming in contact with people and their skin and those types of things. So you're already in a cost structure issue. So to slow a fuel plant down and maintain the same economics in order to meet those quality specifications is a lot of additional cost. And if there's no upside in it, your volume that you're going to produce is so small compared to what you were as a fuel producer, and the quality spec is so much tighter that most will not be able to make that conversion.
Frizzy said these smaller plants, which make beverage-grade ethanol, could switch to hand sanitizer production.
I think that's probably a better fit for the market because they're already in that consumption pharmaceutical-grade space. So we may see a little less vodka on the shelves at the liquor store, but we'll get an increased supply of hand sanitizer coming to market over the next week, 10 days.
The economic stress the industry is facing right now is causing some ethanol plants to idle, but there are no definite numbers on idling plants, as the situation is so fluid at this moment. Moving on into other Midwestern ag news, the Midwest and other parts of rural America were hit hard by flooding last spring. Unfortunately, flooding is once again on the docket for 2020. Bryce Anderson, senior ag meteorologist for DTN, says the good news is the flooding forecast isn't quite as widespread as it was a year ago.
We're seeing more of a sectorized flood prospect this year than we went through a year ago. In the northern section of the belt, particularly north of Interstate 90, conditions are still quite likely to have flooding, at least at some point during this season. And then over the eastern Midwest, the Ohio Valley, the mid and lower Mississippi Valley, and then eastward through Illinois and Indiana and Ohio, rainfall during this spring is likely to be the heaviest, and so that's going to cause some flood potential there.
Other parts of the Midwest likely won't see as much flooding as they did in 2019 either.
There still will be some flooding in the immediate Missouri River Valley. There's no doubt about that. But over quite a bit of the remainder of that western, southwestern part of the Midwest, we're not seeing the threat show quite as much potential as a year ago. So there's some areas that are likely to have some problems this year, but not everybody like a year ago. So it's a lot more variable, a lot more sectorized than last year.
Anderson also says it goes without saying that the true extent of any flooding problem will depend on the level of spring rainfall. One area that's been in flood stage for over a year is the James River Basin that makes its way through eastern North and South Dakota.
The James has been in that state for a long, long time. Last year, South Dakota was the state that had the largest amount of prevented planted acreage claimed, so they really got an incredible amount of precipitation. The situation is still quite high in the forecast percent for probability of at least some minor flooding in the Red River of the North.
Portions of the Midwest went through a March thaw thanks to a run of above normal temperatures. Anderson says that should help somewhat when it comes to the spring flooding potential.
The fact that the snow has melted is a testimony to how mild the winter was compared with last year, because in January and February, by and large, temperatures were above normal, and that did allow for snow melt to take place. And one thing that we see for a benefit there is that there's not likely to be quite as much moisture translate into the river and stream beds all at the same time.
Again, that was DTN senior ag meteorologist Bryce Anderson. And above normal temperatures could be in play for the spring and summer across our state of Illinois. That assessment comes from state climatologist Trent Ford.
Yeah, so across the board, outlooks for temperature are good as far as drying the soil are concerned. So pretty much all the way from the 6 to 10 day and the 8 to 14 day short-term outlooks all the way through the long-term June, July, and August outlooks. We're showing elevated odds of above normal temperatures across the state. So warmer than normal conditions, of course, as we move outward in time, those probabilities get weaker as our uncertainty gets higher, but especially on the short term for the rest of this month into the first part of April, the probabilities are pretty strong for above normal temperatures, and that will help evaporate some of that moisture out of the soil as long as we don't see a lot of precipitation between then and now. So for the short-term outlooks, the next the 8 to 14-day outlooks from the Climate Prediction Center actually show elevated odds of below normal precipitation across the state, which is good to see. If we can get an extended period of time, 7 to 10 days, where we get warm temperatures and below normal precipitation, if not any precipitation, then that can definitely help kind of build in that capacity for soils. Looking farther out, the 30-day outlooks for April and then looking further out into May and June are all showing elevated odds of wetter than normal conditions across the state. Again, those aren't necessarily locked in, but if we don't build in that capacity in the soil to try to take in some of that moisture, we will see issues related to standing water in fields come mid-April into early May.
Again, that was state climatologist Trent Ford. In other state ag news here on your Friday, state parks and lakes continue to be closed to the public as Illinois officials continue to push social distancing to help slow the spread of coronavirus. Department of Natural Resources Conservation Police Sergeant John Williamson says they are finding hunters and fishermen are, in some cases, still unaware of the decree from Governor Pritzker that lakes and parks are closed.
Probably the hardest thing for us to deal with right now is that people will say, oh, well, I've heard they've opened. So they'll come out here, they'll walk right past the signs and things and start fishing or move our barricades and drive on into the middle of the park and know that when, trust us, when immediately as that we can, if the order's opened, that the parks are open, we will remove all the barricades, we'll remove all the signs, and everything will be good. But until you see those barricades moved, until you see those signs moved, you need to stay out. The other one that kind of came around that you guys mentioned was that somebody used our DNR Facebook page banner and put that all 2000 and 2021 hunting seasons were closed, and that caused quite the stir, which is completely false. Once everything opens up as far as state property open to fishing and hunting.
The department has seen isolated incidents of false information circulating on social media as well, posting as though it is coming from them. He indicates the best place to find the latest and accurate information is at the IDNR's website, dnr.illinois.gov. Moving on to local news here on your Friday now, the Hillsborough FFA chapter met back on March 15th for their monthly meeting, and election of officers was held. Elected for this coming school year were President Maddie Malloy, Vice President Preston Lyerla, Secretary Will Spicer, Treasurer Peyton Wilson, Reporter Maria Hernandez, Sentinel Reese Morford, Historian Claire Tester, Parliamentarian Ethan Blackburn, and Chaplain Logan Meyer. The new officers will be installed at the chapter's annual banquet that was supposed to be held last night, but due to the coronavirus, that date of the banquet is still to be determined. And in other local news, due to the circumstances involving the COVID-19 outbreak and the order to shelter in place, the Soil and Water Conservation District office here in Montgomery County is sorry to announce that they have to postpone their spring fish sale, which was scheduled for Tuesday, April 7th. Office staff hopes that they'll be able to reschedule this sale for later in the spring or begin to make plans for their annual fall fish sale as planned. Refunds will be made to those who have already submitted their orders and payments for the spring fish sale. Staff members apologize for any inconvenience this may cause, and the Montgomery County Soil and Water Conservation District's Board of Directors and staff thank you for your continued support for the Soil and Water Conservation District and the programs. Anyone with any direct questions to the Soil and Water District is asked to call the office at 217-532-3361, extension 3. And that concludes Ag News here on a Friday morning. But remember, if you have any other Ag News you'd like to have aired here on the Ag Show, those items can be sent to us at WSMI at WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Friday morning, March 27th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.